This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
It is 4 in the afternoon on a Saturday afternoon. It is Anzac Day. It's a very special episode we've got coming to you for Fender Bender, the hour of motoring every week. It is Saturday afternoon and it's a bit of a miserable one. So let's hope you got your heated seats on and you're ready for a little bit of motoring madness. It is Joy 94.9. My name is Daniel Gardner. I'm filling in for the fabulous Timothy Nicholson. He is over in New Zealand as we speak. But I will not be bearing this burden alone. I am joined by two very special young men in the studio, which is the way I like to keep it. We have the fabulous Mike Costello. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hello, Daniel.
How are you, sir?
I've got that weird post-flu feeling of vague euphoria.
Oh, really?
You know when you're sort of on the comeback trail?
Yes.
I'm feeling good.
And you feel, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So you survived, you're
that's
alive.
Right. I've
and
gotten
you feel,
through it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do you reckon that's like, do you reckon that feeling is relative or it's like an endorphin or something that's released?
I think your body's been so lacking in releasing endorphins for days at a time that it just throws them all out the door in one hit.
Speaking,
that's my theory.
I like the
I don't
theory.
Know how medically sound it is.
Speaking of endorphin rushes, we are joined by another excellent personality, Fionn Torr. Lovely to have you back, sir.
Great to be back.
You are also another old favourite of Fender Bender.
Yeah,
how have you been,
sir? Very, very well. Yeah, yeah. I'm actually quite enjoying this sort of cloudy, miserable weather.
No, you're not.
Well, like you, I was born in England, so, you know, this is like coming home. You
know? But that's exactly the reason I loathe weather like this, is because I spent 26 years without having actually ever seen the sun.
You do have a very good tan at the moment. I'm
Thank
quite surprised.
Much. Thank
yes.
you very much.
And he's wearing flip-flops.
He is.
It's unbelievable.
This is
okay,
true.
All right.
True.
I know I am an absurd pom, but I'm making up for all those years of no sunshine. But this isn't the weather show. This is Fender Bender. We're here to talk about cars, and we have got
cars.
A lot. We do. And I was having a conversation with a lovely German girl earlier, and she said that she doesn't understand how I could be that interested in cars. Well, I've got news for you, Veronica. I love cars, and hopefully you do too. That's why you're tuning in. We've got loads coming up on the show today. We're going to be talking a little bit about local and overseas news. There's been plenty going on overseas, as well as a motor show. And also we'll be talking a little bit about what we've been driving. If you have any questions or queries or just want to get in touch, then of course you can. It's very easy. You can text us on 0427JOY949 or you can email onair@joy.org.au. Let us know what's going on out there. If you've been driving anything interesting or sexy, we'd like to hear about that. But let's get straight into the news, guys. There's a couple of things going on on home turf. First of all, we always dwell on, you know, the doom and gloom that Ford, Holden, Toyota are going to be out of here in just a couple of years. But there are good news stories. And what you may not know is Nissan actually has a casting plant in the Melbourne region. And just this week, they have gone on record saying that is safe. It is safe for at least the foreseeable future. They've even taken on 30 new staff. So things are actually going very much in the right direction for Nissan. And that's excellent news. Mike, I believe you were talking to Richard Emery, who is the boss of Nissan this week.
Yeah. I went along to the, the announcement you'd call it this week. And yeah, like you say, not only is this casting plant that very few people know about merely safe, it's thriving. So a casting plant, they make bits for cars. They make battery components for electric cars. They make transmission pieces for about 50 different Nissan products around the world, a lot of which are sold in Australia. And it's kind of the unheralded story of Australian manufacturing. I mean, most people equate local brands with Holden, Ford, Toyota, and forget that Nissan actually makes a lot here as well. And to hear a story that's actually positive rather than negative and is growing rather than shrinking is incredibly refreshing. You know, in the context of the dying doom and gloom industry that it's all we ever hear about. You know?
Absolutely. I mean, the concern was that, suppliers are in just as much threat as the main manufacturers themselves, because, of course, without a car to build, then you don't need the bits for it. This casting plant is very much just one of those supply chains, and it's very comforting to hear that they will be okay. A lot of their business will now be, all of their business will be overseas. They'll be sending bits around the world, and good to know it will have that little jumping kangaroo on it.
Well, it's interesting. You go, okay, I've got this Nissan Leaf or what have you, and technically it could be 3% Australian made.
Well, if you have a Navara, yeah, the transmission tyre, the transmission case was made in Australia, and there's thousands of those on the road. So
not the most glamorous bit, is it really?
I mean, they're not making actual cars like the others are.
It's not
but
like
it's
the engine.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Or a turbo.
No. I think it's still important, though, and it still keeps a lot of skills in Australia as well. And this is down in Dandenong, and yeah.
Excellent. Good news indeed.
Yeah.
Now then, one word for you, Fionn. Is it one word? It could be two. Stink bugs.
The yellow marmorated stink bug.
Is that what this is called?
This is what it's called. There's a little bug. It originated in China and Taiwan, and it's infiltrated the US in the last 20 years or so, and it's now affected imports of cars to Australia because Australia doesn't want the bug in Australia. So the bugs are basically getting into cars built in the US, which is things like Mercedes ML,
yeah,
BMW X5, Jeep Cherokee. Some of those are Australia's, in their segment, they're some of the top-selling vehicles. And this is something not many people know about, but it's delaying delivery. So people, if you walk in and say, I want an X5, then it might take a while.
So what do you have to do? Do they need to be fumigated or something?
Exactly,
Really? Isn't that weird? But, okay, this is going to sound like a stupid question. How do you know they're in the car? Does it stink?
There's a smell. Apparently, the smell is almond and coriander.
That's quite nice.
Bring it on.
Why don't they call them? They should call them fragrance bugs.
I like it.
Stink bug does seem a bit harsh.
It does,
doesn't it?
It is a bit. Well, I don't know. It's some people like coriander, some people don't.
You know, one-tenth of the population tastes coriander as soap.
I heard that. Really?
Yeah.
Is that real?
That's true. There's a weird taste receptor.
I think we are very interesting people.
I call BS. But I have heard it before, so I don't know.
I could give you another interesting food fact, but I'm not going to. It's about asparagus because...
I think I know where you're going with
this
that.
This is a car show.
You can fuel a car in asparagus, is that it?
No, it's not. And it's not anything to do with biodiesel either.
Oh, okay.
Because this is a car show, I'm not going to fascinate you with my food facts. Instead, we're going to talk about another little bit of local news, which is... Now, you may have heard of a supercar manufacturer. It's in its infant stages. The company is called Joss. And they were talking about making a very potent supercar. It started with a crowdfunding fundraiser, and it looked like it was going very well. The prototype was, you know, came up with the goods. But a bit of bad news, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, so they had a crowdfunding campaign out relatively recently and then pulled that offline because they received funding from a funding group that was going to back them, and it was really exciting because... The notion of making a supercar in Australia against the manufacturing climate here seems so sort of far out there. And you kind of loved the crazy ambition that these guys had. They got some financial backing. It was looking like maybe this will happen. That partnership has dissolved during the week. So kind of back at square one.
Yeah.
And it's this, you know, it's sort of like never-ending ephemeral dream of the Aussie supercar that never seems to quite materialise.
Yeah.
And this is a big step backwards. So it's unclear what this means for Joss, one of those super ambitious mobs that you hope manages to make something happen, but it's not looking good.
I've actually driven that car.
Really?
Yes.
Have you really?
In Project Gotham Racing, the video game.
Oh. You.
Shout out to Critical Hit. Love the show.
Yes.
But
yes.
That's how popular the car was at one stage. About 6 years ago, it was in a video game. So there was a groundswell behind it. And it's a bit sad to see that, you know, will it happen? Won't it happen? We just don't know.
Yeah. We still got Bolwell.
Makes lots of caravans.
They make caravans.
Yes, yeah, they do. And didn't they make fiberglass like animals for kiddies' play parks?
Possibly.
Yes. Oh, well, that's
moving
our,
on.
That's our legacy. Yes, moving on indeed. We will be back very shortly. We're going to have just a short break. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about some international news instead. We're going to talk about things that have been going on in other parts of the world. And
where are we going?
Okay, I'll tell you where we're going to go. We're going to go to, I'll pick China. Okay, Mercedes have got themselves into a spot of bother in China.
Ooh.
Yes, now.
Tell me.
Okay, I'm going to, I will. You just go there.
Bring it.
I'm going to say price fixing. All right, now, price fixing, not a good thing to do. Mm. Not a good look for anyone, but Mercedes were up to no good in China.
Naughty Germans.
They have been found to have fixed prices.
Is this Mercedes or Mercedes Chinese sort of partner that you have to have if you want to sell cars in China?
That is an excellent question, and I could pretend I know the answer to that, but I'm not going to.
Let's just say it's Mercedes.
Yes, okay. Let's. Can I say it's the least legal one. Yeah. So, yeah, the one's not going to get me in any trouble.
Right.
That one.
Let's go to the Chinese one then.
They were fined, wait for it, $57 million.
What? Not really that much to a giant car maker, is it?
Well, yes, I think it is.
I mean, this is a company with billions and billions of dollars of development money. $57 million sort of seems like a bit of a slap on the wrist, really.
I don't know.
It's a pretty naughty move.
It makes the news, and that's not good for reputation.
That's true.
I think that's got to hurt a little bit. So what's the deal, Dan? Fill us in.
Well, it's a bit dodgy ground, really, because, you know, look, what happens in China is very different to what happens in the rest of the world. It is the largest automotive market in the world.
It's huge.
And anything that happens there is very significant. So, as Mike says, $57 million, you know, I'm not sure there's anyone at Mercedes that would be saying, oh, that's all right. Bit of loose pocket change, you know.
Yeah,
it's a big deal for anyone. But the worst thing, of course, is, you know, it damages your reputation. That's the worst thing about this. I mean, the money is one thing, but, you know, it's not a good look for anyone. Mm. So, anyway, Mercedes, they've stumped up the cash. I think they're looking to sweep this one under the carpet. While we're in China and talking about people up to no good, have you heard of a company called Land Wind?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's possibly the most ridiculous name for a car company. They make a model called an X7. And if you do an internet search for images
of
this car,
up.
You may think that you've accidentally searched for a Land Rover Evoque.
Yeah, so it's not actually unheard of for a number of brands based,
understatement.
Yeah, based in China in the past to have created basically carbon copies of famous models and spun them off as their own. And this is the latest example. One of the differences this time, though, is that Land Rover actually said, hold on, we're going to take you to court. You've breached copyright. This is literally a carbon copy of the Evoque, which is one of the most stylish cars on the road.
Agreed.
Court case went to the top, and the Chinese court found that there was no breach of copyright, and they're free to sell the car, which is hilarious because it's literally a photocopy. It's a carbon copy. It's no different. But, you know, it sets precedent. So it basically means that companies now can essentially just make carbon copies of any famous car they like and get away with it.
And this is exactly what we were talking about, you know, that the Chinese automotive industry is like no other in the world. They are quite literally a law unto themselves. They're not the only one at it. There's a BMW X5 blatant copy. I can't remember what that one's called, but it is so... Now, the difference is they may look very similar, but technologically speaking, they are not quite up to scratch.
Under the skin,
yes.
A little bit different.
They're not very safe. They probably don't go quite as well as the originals. but as you say, Mike, the difficult thing with this is it's the way something looks is quite subjective. And if you stand next to it and say, doesn't look anything like it, then, you know, what you can't quantify. You can't, you know, put numbers down on a piece of paper to prove it. And so,
it's just so hilarious. I wish I could have watched the judge hand down the verdict and with a straight face try and say, no, no, it doesn't look the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you couldn't. You couldn't not laugh. One of the big issues is that a lot of giant automotive conglomerates in China are part government-owned. So there is a sort of conflict there. And I think this is perhaps an example of where a conflict is... You know, conflict of interest has stepped in.
You basically can't sell a car in China unless you have that partnership with a Chinese company, and most of those Chinese companies are government owned. So it's a tricky one to navigate for car makers moving into China.
And so if Land Rover wants to take this further, it risks its involvement in selling cars in China full stop.
Exactly.
And China's the biggest market in the world, so you can't do that. So basically, you know, the punishments aren't going to come. So, but the good news is we're going to see more hilarious knockoffs. I mean, who doesn't want to see that? I want to see a Porsche 911 knockoff.
There's another side to that story, though, because I've seen a few comments from Chinese buyers saying, well, the Evoque is $100,000 in China, and I can buy a Land Wind X7, brilliant name, for $40,000, and I should be able to buy a more affordable, you know, model. And you kind of go, yeah, I kind of see it from that point of view, but I don't know.
It just must be so frustrating being one of the car companies saying, look, that's obviously blatantly ripped off.
Yes.
Anyway.
They've stolen our IP. That design is ours. And should they not be held accountable?
I guess so. The sort of person that buys a Land Wind was probably never going to buy the Evoque in the first place. They're not just losing their own buyers.
True.
I wouldn't have thought. If you've got the money to buy the Evoque, you're probably not going to buy
a
knockoff.
So you buy the Land Wind and then you go, one day I'm going to buy the Evoque.
Yeah. And no one will know you've done anything differently.
Pretty much, yeah.
So you've got of that car for years, haven't you? No, no, this is a real one now.
No, I like the other one better, actually.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would be saying that.
True.
Landwin, bless them. While we're in China, let's stay there. And I'm going to... Right, so bear with me on this one. If you take some sesame seeds and you mix it up with some honey, what do you get?
Balaclavas?
Harvard. Harvard.
Where are you going with this, Dan?
Have you heard of a company called Haval?
Yes.
Yes, it's a Chinese brand.
I heard it was Havel.
Is it really?
Rhymes with gravel.
Okay, while we're on the subject, let's do this. EcoSport or EcoSport? This is Ford's little SUV.
Ford says EcoSport, but I say EcoSport.
Because so they've got the EcoBoost engine.
You've got EcoBoost? You don't say EcoBoost.
I don't get it.
I say it's in the eye of the beholder. So okay. Say what you will.
Done. Haval or Havel?
I'm going to go with Havel.
Or Harver, if you're after a healthy snack.
It sounds like gravel.
Okay, they make a car that's called the H2, and it just launched at a motor show called, Mike?
The Shanghai Motor Show.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I thought it had a funny
auto
name.
Show. International something auto like that. Show. But, so, Haval, or Havel, is affiliated with Great Wall, that a lot of you listeners out there may be familiar with, and was one of the sort of pioneering Chinese brands to go on sale in Australia. And it's launching in Australia very soon. They're going to launch a range of SUVs, all starting with H, with a number after the H, denoting the size. And the H2 is kind of the baby Nissan Qashqai rivaling small SUV.
The Tiddler.
Yeah, and the way Haval's pitching itself is it's not a Chinese brand, unlike most of the others, that's selling purely on price. It's not just a cut price model. It's actually supposed to be matching a lot of the Europeans and American brands across the board. That is at least the claim. And if you have a look at the cars, they look quite good. The interiors look pretty modern. The safety is quite high up there. The engine tech seems relatively up to date. And so it's a real signpost of just how far that industry's come in such a short time.
So it's better than a Landwind, then.
Well, yeah, their designs are actually a little bit more original than the Landwind. That's true.
I still think the Landwind looks better. Hey, at least it knocked off a nice looking car in the first place.
So, will we be able to buy a Haval H2 in Australia
very soon? It's launching in Australia within a few months, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's June. We're going to see them June, July.
And from everything you're saying, it sounds like a pretty worthy contender.
Well, yeah, someone from my publication, at least, and I believe both of your publications, drove it during the week in China and was relatively impressed. I mean, it was sort of a brief drive, but the initial impressions that I'm reading about the car are that, okay, it's probably not going to be a class leader, but the claims of it being relatively good are legit.
Okay.
And it's really interesting to see, you know, when the Japanese cars first started coming and then the Korean cars first started coming, they were really terrible at first and they eventually matured into being what they are today. And the Chinese cars seem to be doing the same.
And and it's a lucrative market. It's a you know, in Australia, SUVs.
Wow.
Big business.
Everybody wants one.
Absolutely right.
I want one.
No, you don't.
No, not really.
Because you are an independent thinker, Fionn. That's why you don't want
one. In 10 years' time, maybe you will.
Why?
Maybe,
what happens in 10 years' time?
I don't know.
I like that on Honda HR-V. I think that's
really
cool.
I like the Mazda CX-3.
CX-3's hot too, yeah.
That's
I'd go there.
Yeah.
I'd give that a dip.
If you are thinking of jumping into a new SUV or even considering a Haval H2, let us know, 0427JOY949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. We promise to read out your messages if there are no naughty words in them. And actually, that's never stopped me in the past, so get in touch. A little bit of final news we need to talk about, moving away from China.
Other end of the scale, if you're loaded,
yes,
get one of these.
Thank you, Fionn, for reading your running sheet so you know what's coming up next. Aston Martin.
Hot.
The new DB9 has been spied testing, so we know it's on its way. It's probably not far off a production model.
Year or two.
Does this excite us, boys?
Meh.
What?
I'm getting pretty happy in the pants area right now. I'm feeling very good.
Is that what that was? I wonder why you were fidgeting over there.
Yeah, yeah. I love Aston's. But I want to hear why Mike's a bit meh.
Yeah, Mike.
I think Aston Martin for too long has been coasting on its laurels. I mean, every Aston Martin, the styling hasn't changed, the engines haven't changed, the platforms haven't changed, the interiors feel outdated. It's a company that has literally been floating or resting on its laurels for far too long, and I've lost respect for it. If the new DB9 is as good as we hope, and if its deal with AMG Mercedes comes to more fruition than what it presently has, and it gets a lot of tech from the brilliant German brand, then maybe the turnaround will begin. But
and is that what you reckon it's going to take for them to win your heart back?
Mm-hmm. Not that they care, probably, but I don't know. I kind of it's a company that really has, for me, just sort of coasted. And I know its resources have been stretched and it hasn't had all the money in the world to spend. But even so, I guess it's just not a brand that I really feel that warmly towards.
Mike, I'm surprised. Mm. I'm genuinely surprised. Finn, you're obviously on my side of things here.
Yeah, Aston Martin. I think they're gorgeous.
And it's
cars.
Not me just being patriotic, because I don't
me neither.
Allow... my, yes, of course, yeah. You are sort of a POM as well. No, I think Aston Martin have still got... And I agree with, to an extent, what Mike's saying, that, you know, you can't survive on your legacy forever. You have to come up with a good sooner or later. But I think there is such a heritage to Aston Martin that it probably can get away with more than most.
And I think that design is... there is a timelessness about it. It's still... I think it can still stand the test of time. It still looks like a beautiful car. And yeah, the interiors haven't changed much, but for me, they are just gorgeous. Suede absolutely everywhere. Dashboard, seat, steering wheel, gear shifters.
It's just opulent,
I think you can get it on
it?
The windscreen too. You know, you can't see out the car, but just give me that suede covering.
A suede windscreen.
Oh, yeah.
I bet Bentley would do it for you if you asked.
You get that augmented reality, and it's just virtual reality in front of you, so you can see.
You are... you're drunk, aren't you?
Want augmented reality while I'm drunk, yes.
Well, someone's going to do it. It's only a matter of time.
I won't have to drive the car. So, you know, cars will drive themselves. So, you know.
It does kind of tie into my relatively insistent calls on carmakers, bringing back suede, velour and shagpile to interiors more.
Bring it.
Just the trio. I want to see more of it.
I'd be down for it.
If there's a new car that gets launched with velour in the next little while, I'm going to buy it.
Oh, what about that Holden with the shagpile in the back? Mm-hmm. The Sandman.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Or the
orange?
Modern Sandman.
Yeah, you know why they really...
a Commodore with stickers
it's
on it.
It's not a panel man. No.
You know why they call it shagpile in a Sandman, don't you? Yes. We are going to stop there before it gets any further. You're on Fender Bender. This is Joy 94.9. Saturday afternoon, I'm joined by some fabulous people in the studio, Fionn and Mike. And we're going to talk, without any delay, Fionn, about your experience with a Citroën last week.
Oh, yes, DS3.
This
is a very small, you know, it's a Mini Cooper sort of sized car. Actually shares the old Mini Cooper engine, a 1.6 turbo. And I basically loved it. I've not driven one before. It's been in Australia how long, Mike? About 4 years, something like that?
Yeah, somewhere around that time.
But they've sort of... this is a facelift, so they've sort of redone it a little bit. And I drove this up in Queensland on the national launch. And... absolutely loved it. It was just such an engaging small little car that wraps around you, and it's really quite punchy out of corners, and it handles well and it brakes well. But probably the thing that stands it out above some of its rivals is its style. It looks like nothing else out there. It's got a really distinctive design, very French, very...
And that's what they're going for, isn't it? Is their point of difference is their styling is... Now, that's specifically the DS range, isn't it? So there's the DS5 as well.
Yeah, you've got DS3, DS4, DS5.
And they're all a little bit... they're quite remarkably different, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. There's a long story. I won't go all into detail, but... overseas, you've got Citroën and you've got DS, which is actually split now from Citroën. It's a separate brand, but in Australia, it's still the Citroën DS. So they're keeping it as one brand for now. But anything with a DS in it is basically more luxurious. It's more like a Volkswagen or getting close to an Audi in terms of, you know, the interiors are gorgeous. They're very, very luxurious. So, yeah.
Yeah, DS is the Audi. Peugeot in that group is the Volkswagen. And Citroën is the Skoda.
Okay.
It's all the same company and they've split it up. So they're all delineated from each other.
Mm.
So do you have to pay a bit of a premium for it?
Yes. It's not cheap. It's about 32, 33K for the DS3.
Okay. So that puts it up against things like, realistically, the Mini.
Yeah, very much so.
Okay.
So it's a tough sell, but I think if you want something that really does stand out, because there's thousands of Minis out there now, you know, you're not really... standing out as much anymore with the Mini. Whereas with this thing, you can get, there's something like 200 color schemes because you can get like zebra skin roofs and really cool customizations.
So me.
So yeah, I reckon you'd be right.
Can you get like a cow print roof?
I don't know if they do that. There was about seven different roofs and I didn't see leopard skin or cow print. But you never know. If
that's
you ask nicely.
If you offered them enough, they would totally do it for you.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Most car companies.
Luxury car companies, they aim to please.
Totally.
A little bit like yourself.
You are too kind of saying all the right things. So you liked it then. What's different about it to the last one? Is this a mild facelift or is it?
Yeah. It's a mild facelift. So it's got a slightly different front end, tweaked brake lights. It just looks a bit more contemporary. It looks really, really modern, basically.
I think the big thing with this launch was just to remind everybody that this car actually existed. Because it's such a, incredibly competitive hot hatch market out there now, the Ford Fiesta ST and the Renault RS Clio and the Polo GDI. There's so many $30,000-ish pocket rockets, and this one really sort of fell through the cracks. Even Citroën's sister brand Peugeot has the 208 GDI that does okay in the sales race. A lot of people just didn't know this was a thing. And so, as well as the Mini, it's got, you know, countless rivals out there to compete with. And it's trading on the fact that it looks like nothing else on the road. And yes, it's a bit pricey, but hey.
People are prepared to pay a premium for something a bit different. And Australian buyers typically, yeah.
Yeah, I sort of go, well, it is a bit more, but I think you kind of do get value for money, particularly if you, you know, particularly after something stylish.
Yeah. It is a good point you make. Has the Mini become a bit passé? Are there too many out there now? I still love the Mini, but...
Absolutely. Yeah, so do I. Victim of its own success, perhaps, is that it began trading on its difference, which is it was different, and now it's sort of not really... Have they shot themselves in the foot a little bit? On the DS3 again, I mean, I really liked the previous version. I drove the convertible of that a little while ago. Now, tell me if I'm wrong. Haven't they done something a bit silly that the hot version of it now is only available as a manual? I think that's what they've done.
Good.
Which, well, absolutely, in a room full of petrol heads, we're not going to say there's anything wrong with that at all. But this is Australia.
Yes,
and
you're
we
right.
like automatics. So on the one hand, they're, as you say, Mike, they're putting the hand up saying, hi, everyone, we're still here, buy a DS3, they're cool.
Yes.
But no one's going to buy it.
If there is no auto, so that's a hard sell.
Well, cars that are made in Europe historically often don't have a decent auto option, because in Europe it's still very much a manual market, especially France. You know, in Paris, you have to be in a manual car, you have to park it in neutral because people can bump park past you. Yeah. So when they're brought here, they don't have autos, and Aussies don't buy manuals. So... historically, manuals are about 5% of car sales. So, yeah, it's going to hurt them.
So if we had a message for our listeners, we would say, buy a manual.
Well,
what's the matter with you, honestly?
They're more engaging, but it depends. If you've only got an auto license, you're kind of hamstrung, aren't you?
As if, come on. If you're out there and you only have an auto license, I want you to get in touch. 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. Okay, we've had someone. They haven't even emailed. We've got the lovely Emily in the studio with us. And apparently you only have an auto license.
Well, not everybody's a car enthusiast, Dan.
There's going to be some questioning in the next break. Do get in touch. We'd love to know what's going on out there. But for now and then, Mike, well, I want to talk to you about something you've been driving.
Oh, yeah.
You've actually been in a couple of things, both notable and worth talking about. The first one is you had a brief stint in a Subaru, didn't you?
I did. So the Subaru Forester is kind of... one of the better known cars in the medium SUV market, but just lately there's been a lot of new models that are launched that have kind of taken all the spotlight away from it. And so Subaru, about a month ago, introduced an updated version, and it had a couple of things that the old one didn't have. First of all, it has a proper multimedia system. So in other words, the old one had an audio radio interface that looked like it came from about 1973, and I'm surprised I couldn't fit an 8-track in it. And the new ones are actual... proper touchscreen. It's got all the you know, the integration with sat nav that you require in the modern age, basically, and brings it up to be competitive with its main rivals. That's one step. The other step is they've finally got an automatic version of the diesel, because touching on the manual only thing, they only had a manual version of the diesel, so nobody was buying the diesel, and a diesel engine in an SUV is generally a good bet.
Absolutely.
So I had one that had the auto diesel with the proper touchscreen in the middle, and it really, for me, returns the Forester close to the top of the pile. For me, it was sort of mid-range among those, you know, largest medium SUVs. The Mazda CX-5 is a good bet. The new Nissan X-Trail is a good thing. Volkswagen Tiguan's always a good staple. But the Forester has things that they don't. The outward visibility is fantastic. It's got, you know, full-time all-wheel drive, and a lot of medium SUVs don't.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of them have a system that detects slip and then allocates torque depending on where it's needed. But the Subaru is a bit different. You know, it's got this kind of rugged styling about it that it looks like it's actually able to go off-road. And it's not the most amazing thing off the beaten path, but it can certainly handle a little more than most of its rivals can. And you know, in a lot of ways, it's, I guess, if you are buying an SUV because you want to put the image out there that you do like to actually get off the bitumen from time to time, it's probably the one that you'd be looking at.
One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about this is because I'm actually in an Outback at the moment, which is also the diesel auto. And we were talking a little bit before we came on air, and we both agreed that it's such a likeable car. There's so much, and it gives me that feeling of, I jump in it and you just feel like you can do anything in it. You feel like you could drive to any part of Australia. You could go, you know, you'd be in comfort. You could have a load of kids or stuff in the car. And it's got that excellent four-wheel drive system, which I think is surprisingly good off-road. I did the launch of that car a little while ago, and they did take us on some...
We did it together, didn't we, Dan?
We did,
Finn. We shared a car.
That was a lot of fun.
We didn't play Aqua.
That's right. That's because you would have kicked me out.
And
the
world was a better place as a result. But no. it is amazing. I've done some off-roading in those sorts of soft roaders, as they're colloquially named.
Yeah.
The SUVs that never leave the city.
Yeah.
People buy them because they like to sit up nice and high and have a practical body, but, you know, you think, they can't really go off the beat path, but they really can. You know, I've taken an Nissan X-Trail rock hopping before. I've taken it across a river. They're not really designed for
it. Did you break it?
No, it did it just fine. You would be amazed what these cars can actually handle. And among those cars, the Subarus have a legacy, pardon the pun, for Subaru fans out there.
Very good, that one. Very good.
That can actually, they can handle it better than most. And I guess that's sort of the appeal. And for me, if I was in the market, a Forester would probably be my first pick.
They are, I genuinely think they're excellent. And the styling has come on leaps and bounds.
And a CVT that's actually likeable.
How good is that? I won't
get into too much mechanical nonsense, but a CVT, continuously variable transmission, one ratio. They have a propensity to sort of drone, to sound like they're a manual that's clutch slipping.
Yeah.
It's a non-conventional automatic. And traditionally, they're terrible. Subaru's found out a way to actually make it livable and good and efficient, which is the main benefit of a CVT to begin with. It's, for me, the only CVT out there that I would actually buy. And with that, you know, the diesel's not amazing. It's not as good as the Mazda diesel. It's lacking a bit of torque.
It's a wet
but
rag.
But it's fine. It's a decent, you know, touring car.
Mike, gets normally, the job done.
Absolutely. Yeah. I normally like to play a bit of devil's advocate and just blatantly disagree with everything you say. But on this one, I have to agree. I agree everything you're saying about the CVT. Normally, they're horrendous things that are droning and awful. But Subaru absolutely cracked it. Now, if you like, speaking of going off-road, when we come back from the next break, I could probably tell you a story of how I nearly lost $90,000 worth of BMW?
Yes, please.
Would you like to hear that?
I really want to hear that story.
All right, that's coming up after this break. You're on Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. You are on Joy 94.9. My name is Daniel. I think I just went through puberty there. Did you hear that?
Oh,
I did. It was bound to happen sooner or later.
Second wind.
Land wind.
Second land wind. Nice.
Before the break, we were talking about the various off-road capabilities of certain cars.
Mm.
And we agreed that in our limited experience with Subarus off-road, they're pretty good.
They are, yes.
And I promised to tell you a story of how I nearly lost a BMW X3.
Was it yours?
No. It belonged to BMW. Still does, I'm pleased
good
to say.
Good to hear, yep.
All right, okay. So, here's the story. As you will know, our dear listeners will have known that we were off air for 3 months, had a little break. And during that time, I went for a little holiday to Western Australia. And the good people at BMW were very kind to lend me an X3. And it was the top of the range one, the diesel. Now, for those of you who don't know, X3 is sort of a medium-sized SUV. Prestigious brand, BMW, very luxurious, leather and all the bits and pieces. And I thought, well, because those cars are typically, you know, in and about towns and, you know, the Touareg track, as people lovingly call them, I thought what I'm going to do is I'm going to write my review and I'm going to take some nice pictures of it actually doing some off-road stuff.
Getting muddy.
That's right. I thought, perfect, you know, show it in a different light and actually critically acclaim what people say those cars can't do, and that is go off-road. Now, the X3 has got its X-Drive system, which is a very clever four-wheel drive system. And so I was on my way down to a little place called Nanup, and I saw a sign off to the coast and a place called Preston Beach. And I thought, bingo, there we go. Get some lovely shots of it by the Western Australian wild seas.
I grew up right near there.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful part of the world. There. And as I arrived in the car park, there was a track that went off to the right saying four-wheel drive access to the beach. And there we are. I thought, well, this is fantastic. Rubbing my hands. I thought, I'll go and get some shots of it on the sand, you know, looking spectacular. BMW very happy with me with all my pictures of it looking awesome. And I was thinking that right up until the moment I got it bogged at its axles.
Ooh.
About 4 metres from the incoming tide.
Oh!
In the middle of nowhere.
Soft sand.
On a public holiday, I had not seen another soul for many kilometres. The nearest civilisation was about 3 kilometres up the road.
Mm.
And I reckon I had probably about half an hour before I lost $90,000 worth of X3 to the Indian Ocean.
Yowza.
I can safely say I've never been so terrified in my life.
Was your heart beating a little faster than usual?
I can't explain the feeling of dread. I mean, you know, from time to time, touch wood, cars get damaged, okay?
You do hear stories.
You do hear stories.
In our industry.
But if I drove into a lamppost, I could go back to BMW and say, there's your car. It's got a big dent in the front, but there it is. What I was facing the prospect of is going back to BMW and saying,
What
I
X-ray?
I don't have your car.
You never gave me an X-ray. What are you talking about?
That's right. Exactly. No. It's not like I
Moby Dick ate it.
It's not been written off. It's just gone. I don't have it anymore.
Yeah.
And that was realistically what I was going to have to do. Until the clouds parted and from heavens above came around the corner a jacked up Toyota Land Cruiser with balloon tires, winches all over it, supercharged engine. And I ran it. I would have thrown myself under his wheels to stop him. And I said, obviously, you can see I've been a class dickhead and driven too close to the water.
And he was thinking to himself, who is this
tool in a BMW? Yeah, what the F are you doing that close to the water? He told me that that Preston Beach is one of the most notorious beaches for getting cars bogged on the whole of Western Australian coast. And it was nightmarish. Now, what I will say is I tested to the limits of actual failure. And up to that point, I have to say, it was doing really well.
Did you get photos of it bogged?
Yes, I did. And they will go in the review, don't worry. And this guy pulled me out and he said that where I was, he said he wouldn't even drive his car on that bit because it is so bad. It was like quicksand. And he put two straps together and pulled me out of the sand and off we went. And he got a six-pack of beer because he basically saved my job, I think.
Yeah. That's
so cool. What I will say is my review and critical acclaim of the X3 is actually, it did pretty well, up to the point where I nearly drove it into the sea. It did very well indeed.
Yes.
And there endeth my BMW X3 review. It's actually pretty good. It's very good. What I do like about it is...
A bit old.
Like
7 years old now.
No, this is the new one.
Oh, yeah, they haven't been around that long. Yeah. But it is a point, like, when you're in the industry that we're in and you're driving cars all the time and you're looking for ideas to do feature stories on, we've all been in some situation where we've been a little uncomfortable with what we've put a car through.
Uncomfortable.
That's a particularly good one, though.
Uncomfortable.
That is a complete understatement.
Oh, dear. It was awful. Now, so BMW, if you're listening, it all went back in one piece.
Dan loves the car.
Why is there so much salt damage?
10 out of 10. X3, oh,
no, no. We didn't end up going in the water at all, but there was sand everywhere. Mike, you've been driving something interesting lately, haven't you? You went and did the launch for a couple of Nissans, didn't you?
Yes. So, as I said earlier on, I was with Nissan during the week for the opening of their car, the announcement about their casting plant, and I spent some time with the big boss man of that, and then I drove a couple of updated versions from their range, an updated Juke and the updated Micra. The Juke is a car, I guess there's sort of a parallel between the Juke and the Citroen DS3 that you talked about before, Fiend, in that there's nothing else that looks remotely like the Juke. It looks a bit like a crouching frog. It's a really, really weird car.
To be kind.
But the thing is, Nissan, about 5 years ago, launched his car in Europe, where they also build it, and it was designed to capitalize on the boom in tiny SUVs. So in other words, a car that's about the size of a Mazda 2, but a little bit higher, gives you the feeling as though it could possibly go off-road, but it really can't. It's designed purely for the cities, and the zeitgeist was beginning to take hold, where everybody was buying this sort of car. And Nissan was really bold about it. They've got the Qashqai, or the Dualis, as some people know it, which is the conventional car. This is the outlandish version. And kudos to Nissan for having, you know, the guts to do a car like that. And it's gone gangbusters. It sells in massive numbers around the world. It's been in Australia for a couple of years. Now it's been updated. It's got a new base engine, a 1.2-litre turbo engine, which is a lovely little unit, but in typical European style, again, is manual only. Oh. So if you want the auto, you have to buy an old 1.6, which isn't as nice. It's also got a hot version, 140-kilowatt 1.6-litre turbo, which makes it an almost miniature hot hatch /SUV thing.
Yep.
But let's be honest, this car, it's not really class-leading in any way. It's not the most spacious. It's not the most practical. It's not the most well-equipped SUV for the money. The only thing that it trades on that it has that others don't is that look. You can customize it with all sorts of different color trims. And just the general style of it, it's such a weird thing. If you haven't seen the Nissan Juke, J-U-K-E, you should definitely Google it and check it out. You will love it or you will hate it. You will definitely not be on the fence about it. And again, props to Nissan for doing it. But realistically, for me, it's a fairly average car in most facets. But hey, people buy it on the style. So it really hasn't changed in that front.
And that's the core appeal of this car is the styling, isn't it? Because as you say, it has no off-road prowess at all.
And it's not very practical. It's not that well equipped. The cabin's a bit cheap. It's not a very cheap car to buy. It really doesn't lead its segment in any area. But again, you know, people buy all sorts of things just because they look good. And if you love the style of it, there is absolutely nothing else that you can get.
So, yeah, so who is going to buy this car? Is it, you know, young people? Empty I say nesters. That like I'm not one. Empty of course, I am very young.
Empty nesters. You're blind 20, people. You're 22, right?
I turned 35 on Wednesday.
Wow. You turned or you're turning this Wednesday?
I don't know what people are saying. I've been turning for years. But
25?
35.
Oh, right.
35.
You don't look a day over 34.
All right. I'll take any compliments I can get.
No, you look a lot younger than that.
So your insurance goes down, yeah? Is that the bonus of getting
a silver lining?
I don't know, does it?
Surely.
Surely I'd have to actually insure might something be, for that to happen.
Yeah, it might be 40. I don't know.
I'm going to insure my face because, obviously, it's my greatest asset.
Well,
it
you know...
It makes me excellent at radio.
I do know you drive a BMW, Dan. So.
Well...
get it bogged.
On occasion. Yeah, not that one.
No, you actually have your own BMW, Dan.
I do, yes, I do. The poor thing sits at the back of work wondering what it did wrong because it never gets driven anymore because car companies keep coming up to
Full
us and saying,
spiderwebs.
Will you drive this for a week? Yes. And also at the launch, there was a new Nissan Micra, wasn't there?
Yes, and this is another case of a car maker kind of wanting to remind everybody that this car actually exists. It's a really interesting market trend in Australia where the tiny, tiny cars, the cheapest cars that you can buy, they compete in what's called the micro segment. And sales in that segment last year were down about 50%. They're down about 50% again this year on last year. So it's just plummeting. If you had a graph, it would be looking like a valley. And so no one quite knows why, because there really isn't anything you can buy that's that cheap. So the theory is people are buying more used cars or hanging on to what they have rather than stepping up into something else. Or perhaps they're getting really good deals on slightly more expensive cars, which we know is happening. Either way, cars like the Micra are not selling as well as they were. Maybe a quarter now would be the sales rate as to what it was 2 or 3 years ago. And it's a little bit, it's getting on in years, the Micra. It's been around for a little while. It's a car that really only ever sold on price. And the biggest problem for it is now it's got some rivals like the Mitsubishi Mirage and the Suzuki Solerio that undercut it on price to a fair degree. And in a segment that is sold purely on price to begin with, any differential becomes a really big deal. So Nissan's decided to get rid of one of the spec variants that offered and trim it back to just two, ST, TI. It's chopped the price of the top car, added a bunch of equipment, including sat nav, which is very rare in a car that costs 17 grand. Mm. And the base car, it's added a bit of equipment to it, and it's still about 13 and a half grand.
Right.
So we're talking cheap cars here.
That is.
But the updates aren't that major. There's not really a whole lot. There's some subtle styling changes, a bit more equipment here and there. As I said, the price cut at the top of the range. The biggest problem is that the competition is so strong. The new Mazda 2, the Honda Jazz, we're all talking there or thereabouts the same price. And the Micra is a bit smaller, its rivals are cheaper, and it's getting on. So if you're going to, if you haggle and you get a really good deal on a Micra, go for it. But, you know, Nissan maybe should have chopped the price when they changed the rest of the car as well.
There we are. There we are. Wise words from Mr. Costello, as always. And on that note...
Sorry, Nissan.
I'm afraid... You can't be nice to everyone. No. You know, come on. And we wouldn't be very good at our jobs if we said everything was good, wouldn't we?
Can I give a quick shout-out to Mad Max?
Oh, yeah, of course. That's nearly...
Coming soon.
Absolutely.
I'm so stoked about this.
There's a trailer out there now, right?
There is, yeah, yeah. So this is coming on May 14.
Yes.
Mad Max Fury Road, and we're talking about $300 million. So basically, it's the biggest explosion you've ever seen in your life.
Wow!
Pretty much, that's what you're going to go see.
Okay. Is Mel Gibson in this one?
No, I don't think he's even doing a cameo because he went mad.
I think he's kind of on
actually
the outer.
Went mad.
I think he did a bit of off the cuff ad libbing, and it didn't go too well.
Very exciting stuff. Gentlemen, you're never going to believe it, but it is time for us to pull up stumps and say cheerio. I know. Fionn, thank you so much for popping in and saying hello to us again. I do hope you call in a call pass soon.
Been a pleasure, mate.
Absolutely. And Mike, as always, very good to see you, sir.
Likewise, Daniel.
Have a lot of fun out on those launches. And that leaves me to bid our good listener farewell. Thank you so much for listening. Coming up next is Techno Gaze with Michael, Mark and Rena. And we, as always, will be back same time, same place, probably with Tim Nicholson at the helm. And until then, it bids me just to say cheerio and drive safely. You are on Fender Bender, Joy 94.9.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
Safe driving.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.